Good evening, everyone. I'm sure you've had a long evening and an informative evening already. And the truth is, as great as a schus as it is to be here, I feel a little bit awkward only because Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva has such a wonderful repository and storehouse of incredible malamdim, incredible talmidei chachamim, inspirational personalities. So I'm not sure why you need me, to be honest. I hope that I could share with you something of a little bit of value, a little bit of inspiration, maybe from an outsider's perspective. You know, sometimes when people go ahead and are part of an organization, especially for a long time, every organization has its idiosyncrasies and has its difficulties and has its challenges and has the things that work well, the things that don't work so well, the things that don't work at all. And sometimes when you're in the organization, so all you become so subsumed by the problems that you don't see all of the incredible, beautiful things. And Baruch Hashem, as having been a TA parent, and as Rabbi Schwartz just mentioned, although I'm having a little bit of difficulty actually wrapping my head around it, that my daughter's getting married, B'sha Tova Umetzlachas, to a wonderful, wonderful product of the yeshiva, a family that's a product of the yeshiva. There are so many beautiful and wonderful things that happen within these walls. I was saying to Peretz this morning, even just the notion of this dinner, of everybody coming together, not just Limudei Kodesh, and not just secular studies, and not just teachers or office staff, but everyone together in one room sharing a seud together says one beautiful and strong message, that we're all dedicated to the same mission. And that is raising, I hope this is the mission of the yeshiva, I should have checked the website before I came, of just raising beautiful B'nai Torah. Now again, let's be honest, there could be chilukei deos, there could be differences of opinion, what perhaps the paradigmatic Ben Torah looks like. And there could even be differences of opinion as to what are the necessary ingredients to create the well-rounded Ben Torah. That's okay. You know, as my Rebbe often said, when Klal Yisrael camped by Har Sinai, the Torah says, "Vayichon Sham Yisrael Neged Har," that Israel, the Jewish people, singular, camped opposite the mountain. And Rashi HaKadosh, of course, is bothered by why doesn't it say "Vayachanu"? Why doesn't it say they camped, plural? And Rashi HaKadosh, of course, has the beautiful statement where he says, "Ishachad Belevechad," one people, one heart. And Rebbe often pointed out, Rashi doesn't say "Ishachad Bedeya Echad," doesn't say one people with one opinion. For one simple reason, never happened and ultimately never will happen. But that's not the knock on Klal Yisrael. That's part of the beautiful synergistic energy of our people. We have a lot of opinions and we are very opinionated about our opinions and we're very territorial about our opinions and we like our shitos and don't encroach on my shitos and don't tell me what to do or how to do. And there's a koach in that. Because what that ultimately highlights is an incredible passion. So we're all united in a mission to produce beautiful, magnificent B'nai Torah. We're united in that mission. And whether you realize, and I said to parents, I'm sure the speakers before were informative and inspirational and beautiful, but even if you get nothing from all of the wonderful speakers this evening, you're here together. And this su'udah itself unifies us all in our collective mission. Whether you teach a shir, whether you teach history, whether you walk in the office, whether you work in the office, or you teach physical education, whatever you do, you play a role in creating and in crafting beautiful B'nai Torah, excuse me. We have differences of opinions, differences of approaches. Those should be embraced because it's through those machloks and through those disputes, which are no doubt all l'shem shamayim for the sake of heaven, that's how we produce a yeshiva. That's how you produce B'nai Torah. And that's ultimately how you build Klal Yisrael. So it is an incredible zechus to be able to be here tonight with all of you. And I don't want to take a lot of your time because I know that it's before school and I'm sure you all have a number of other things that you want to get done before the school year begins. But I'll just share with you a few short ideas. I'll start with an idea that I'm sure you've heard before. Everything that happens within this campus focuses on one goal, and that's the goal of chinuch. And often we go ahead and I think we erroneously translate the word chinuch as education. So, you know, there's a beautiful sefer called Chovas HaTalmidim. I'm sure everyone's familiar with it. It's written by the Holy Piagetzna, Rav Kolonim Kalman Shapira, Hashem Yikom Domo. He's most well known for his Eish Kodesh, perhaps, the drushes he gave in the Warsaw Ghetto during those dark years. But he penned an incredible sefer called Chovas HaTalmidim, which the truth is, I don't have like a teaching position here, but if I did, I would tell you that it should absolutely be part of the curriculum. Every single Talmud should learn Chovas HaTalmidim for one simple reason: to have a successful classroom experience, sheer experience, there has to be reciprocal responsibility. The responsibility to learn is not just on the Rebbe, not just on the Mora, not just on the teacher. Students have a responsibility as well. And if they succeed, they share in the success. And if they fail, they share in the responsibility for the failure. So the Rebbe, in his introduction to this beautiful sefer, has an introduction. He calls it Siach Im HaMelamdim V'Hor Yeladim, a conversation with educators and parents. And the Rebbe, and I'll tell you, if you have not yet seen this essay, it's worth a couple of minutes to read it, because it's life-changing. It's life-altering. And here the Rebbe says, what does the word chinuch mean? He says, it doesn't mean, he uses the word pedagogia. It doesn't mean pedagogy. Chinuch doesn't mean the dissemination of information. You know, a college professor has the luxury of walking into a classroom, disseminating information, closing his book, and then walking right out for one simple reason. A college professor doesn't have to have a vested interest in the success of his student. He doesn't even have to know his student. His job or her job is simply to be the purveyor of information. But that's not a Rebbe. That's not a Mora. That's not a teacher in this yeshiva. Says the Rebbe something amazing. Chinuch means to unlock the potential of something. And he gives examples. He says when a person, Baruch Hashem, either builds a home, moves into a new home, you have a Chanukah Sabayis. What's the point of that Chanukah Sabayis? Why do you have a Chanukah Sabayis? So, you know, there's a beautiful Stipler. The Stipler says, why does a Jew build a home? Why does a Jew build a home? So he says, because you need somewhere to put your mezuzah. Now, the Stipler wasn't big on jokes. So when the Stipler understood this meaning, he said, why does a Jew have a home? A Jew has a home because a home is an opportunity for spiritual development. A Chanukah Sabayis is, I say, Ribono Shel Olam. I live in this big, beautiful home. It's wonderful, but it's not an ends. I'm going to unlock the potential of these walls. I'm going to unlock the potential of these bricks. I'm going to use my home for Achnasas Archim. I'm going to use it to invite others. I'm going to use it for Chesed. I'm going to use it for all kinds of things. And therefore, says the Rebbe, and I'm not doing his piece justice, but it gives you just the gist. Chinuch means unlocking the potential of the student. It means unlocking the potential of the boy who's in your shir, the boy who's in your class, or the boy with whom you have an interaction. It's not pedagogia. It is not the transmission of information. Anyone could transmit information. Google could transmit information. The job of a teacher is to be a mechanich or a mechaneches, to unlock the potential in each and every student. And the obvious question becomes, so how do we do that? So my first answer is, I don't know. I don't teach in the classroom. Baruch Hashem, I have the opportunity to give many shiurim, but none of them as challenging as the daily circumstances that you have. Because I have an incredible privilege, which is the people who come to the shiur come because they want to come. They don't have to come. No one's waking them up in the morning saying, come on, you got to get to shiur. You got to get... It doesn't happen. So Baruch Hashem, I have this chus to have a little bit more of a self-motivated audience, because they're a little bit more self, they're there because they want to be there. So I'll tell you a secret. All of your Talmidim also want to be there. Just some of them don't know it yet. And your job is to make them feel like there's no place I'd rather be. And how do you do that? By unlocking their potential. So I want to share with you a few ideas. And again, maybe they're correct. Maybe they will work. Maybe they won't work. I'll just tell you the things. It's literally Dvarim Hayotzim Min Halev. I think they're correct. I've seen them be correct. And hopefully you can utilize some of it. So number one is recognize that each of you here tonight are Jewish nobility. What do I mean by that? There's a beautiful Gemara Masech Shabbos. The Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish, Mishur Madi Yehuda Nesir, Reish Lakish said, A mevatlin tinoko shel beis rabon afilu lebinyan beis hamikdash. We do not stop the learning of Jewish children even to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And it's an incredible statement. First day of school comes, the bell goes off, but it's not the bell, it's the messianic shofar. Melech HaMashiach is here, assuming this approach that we're going to build the third Beis HaMikdash with our own hands. All hands on deck, everyone has to help out. Everyone helps out, except your students, except your Talmidim. The students don't leave the classroom, because there is nothing more important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than literally, again, the Talmud Torah, the learning. And by the way, I just want to point this out, and maybe I'm overstepping a little bit, but I'll say it first and ask for forgiveness later on. Torah, and this is important to everyone here, doesn't just mean the subjects you learn in the morning. What a yeshiva has to strive for is to show that even in the secular studies, even in the general studies, that's Avodas Hashem as well. That's the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because why can't the child see the godless, the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through science and through math? Why can't a child see the creativity of the human mind through literature? Why can't a student learn the greatest pillars of Musar by learning world history? The job of a yeshiva is to tell students, not you learn Torah here and you don't learn Torah here. We learn Torah the entire day. In the morning, it's pure, unadulterated Misora Dikatora. In the afternoon, in the other classes, it's Torah, but through a different kind of lens. And therefore, says the Gemara, the children learning is so important that even when Mashiach comes, we don't stop classes. Now, if the children stay in classes, I have good news and bad news. Because if the children have to be in class, so who else stays in class? All of you as well. When Mashiach comes, I'm going to run to go help build the Beis HaMikdash. You're not. Why? Because you have a much bigger and greater mission in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And what Chazal ultimately again are trying to teach us is that the building of the personal Mikdash is even greater than the building of the national Mikdash. Each and every day you build Batei Mikdash. Each and every day, those students who sit in your classes are not just children. Each of them is their own world unto themselves. Each of them is their own Beis HaMikdash unto themselves. And each of you in your own beautiful Kadosh and Tara way have the ability to build the Beis HaMikdash, to build multiple Batei Mikdash each and every day. And that job is so important, so that even when the rest of the world is building the Bayis Shlishi, you're going to continue building the beautiful individual Batei Mikdash that you do within your classrooms each and every day. Your work is the holiest work of Am Yisrael. And we're amongst friends, so I'm going to be honest. You don't get paid enough money. You don't get enough covered or recognition. You're fundamentally underappreciated and undervalued. I think it's always been that way. I don't mean in the yeshiva, I just mean historically for Klal Yisrael. And I don't know that I have the answers to be able to go ahead and change that for you. But sometimes life is not worrying about how other people view you, but it's about how you view yourself. You are Klal Yisrael's nobility. And if you feel noble, and if you act noble, that nobility will come out to your students as well. If you hold of yourselves in that way, that your job is the most important job in Klal Yisrael. I know you hear that a lot, but I'm giving you a Gemara that says, everyone else builds the Beis HaMikdash except for you, because you are all building the Beis HaMikdash each and every day. If you tell yourself your nobility, and you allow yourself to feel like nobility, you will bring that nobility into your classroom, and that nobility will have an incredible hashpah, an incredible impact upon your students. Lesson number two. The world changes. I just heard a beautiful story. Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, he told the story of Rav Yaakov Meir Schechter. Yaakov Meir Schechter is probably one of the most respected members of the Breslov community in Eretz Yisrael. But not just, but he really, his fame transcends Breslov. It's one of the Rashi Yeshiva, Yeshiva Shar Shamayim, an individual who's considered to be a paramount mechanech, an incredible individual. So there's a story that's told that it came to Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter's attention that there was a machanek, there was a Rebbe in Meir Sharim, one of the Chadarim, who was hitting the students. He was punching the students, and they were very upset with him, but the Rebbe would not change his ways. So they asked, Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter, could you meet with him? So he said, sure. The machanek comes to his home, he meets him, he says, tell me, what are you doing? Why is it that you're hitting the children? So he said, excuse me, but the Rav should know, I come from a long line of mechanchim. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather were all mechanchim here in Yerushalayim, and this is the Mesorah I have. To which Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter says, okay, wishes him atzlacha rabba. The mechanich makes his way home, and as he's coming home, he sees a group of chassidim outside of his apartment, and he sees that they're taking out the appliances. They're taking out the refrigerator, they're taking out the microwave, they're taking out everything. So what are you doing? So Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter told us to remove the appliances from the home. So he runs back to Yaakov Meir Shechter and says, Rebbe, what's going on? Why are they taking the appliances? He said, if you're so committed to the derech of your forefathers, then you know what? They didn't have the microwave, and they didn't have the dishwasher, and they didn't have the stove with all the burners. So you know what? You should be a purist. Be committed to the derech of your forefathers. You don't need all of these accoutrements as well. And Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter was trying to teach this mechanech a very important lesson. The world changes. Children change. Teaching has to change. Sometimes, and this is not just true in chinuch, this is true in everything in life, sometimes we get used to doing things a certain way for a certain amount of time. And especially again in the world of chinuch, especially after you have your lesson plans and you know exactly how you want to teach and what should happen there, sometimes it's easy to fall into a rut. I'm not chas v'shalom suggesting at all that this is a message unique to you. I think it's just a message for people. You fall into a rut. Oh, I'll dust off the lesson plan book. I'll dust off the shiurim. We learned this mesechta X number of years ago. I'm ready to go. The Talmidim that you're going to have in your classroom this year are fundamentally different than the Talmidim of last year. And the Talmidim of last year are fundamentally different than the Talmidim of 20 years ago. Children change. You all know this. Because if you've been in education for a while, you know that the things that children have to struggle with today, 20 years ago, no one would have ever dreamed that there would have been these incredible crises that happen within our homes, that happen within our mishpachos day to day. We have children, literally again, who live in situations that could only be described as Gehenom. And sometimes you don't know about it, because externally everything looks okay. Our children, and this is not a technology speech, but technology, what our children have access to, what our children could see. And even if the yeshiva has rules during the year, there's something called summer vacation. And every single teacher knows that an entire year of chinuch could be undone in 6 weeks. Truth is, could be undone in 6 days. That's the honest truth. Our children face unprecedented challenges. And because we're speaking openly, and sometimes they have parents who are absolutely out to lunch. Sometimes they have parents who don't have a clue about what it takes to raise pure and upright Jewish children in a society that is objectively hostile to our values. So if I'm using the same lesson plans, the same methodologies, the same approaches from a decade ago, chances are it's not going to be applicable to the students of today. The world changes. Our approach to teaching has to change. Our approach to students has to change. Lesson number 3. Believe in your children. I'll just share with you 2 more short ideas. Believe in your children. What do I mean by this? There's an amazing Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Mishnah Pirkei Avos in the 2nd chapter discusses the 5 primary Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And the Mishnah lists all of them and lists their attributes as well. And one of the individuals who's listed in the Mishnah is a man by the name of Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. So you know, the Medrash, Avos Rabbi Nasan Yalkut Shimoni, tell us a little bit about Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus' upbringing. So you can imagine, if you have a father by the name of Hyrcanus, Hyrcanus is not a Jewish name, so whatever that means about his father, whatever that means about his family, but the Medrash tells us that his father was very wealthy, and was a farmer, owned many different tracts of land. And young Eliezer, when he comes of age, is obligated to go out and work in the family business and tend the fields. And the Medrash relates, I want to read to you the words. The Medrash says, Pam achas amar eilech ve'elma Torah lifnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Medrash relates that one day, Hyrcanus was sitting in the field looking very dejected. His father came over to him, his father said, what's wrong? Maybe the soil is too tough, there are too many rocks, what's wrong? He said, Father, I want to go learn Torah by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. To which his father responded, He says, stop with the silliness. Stop talking about going to learn Torah. You're not getting dinner until you plow the field. Story continues. Another time, Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is sitting in the field looking dejected. This time, the Medrash says he's crying. His father says, Nu, what's wrong? And he wrote, Selumot Torah. Father, I just want to go to yeshiva. I just want to go and learn Torah. And listen to what his father said. His father said to him, at your age, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was 20, at your age, you'll never amount to anything. You could be a good farmer. You could be a good agrarian. To go learn Torah now, you're nothing. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus runs away from home. And as they say, the rest is history. He becomes not only a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but one of the closest disciples of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. But the Medrash ends off with an incredible story. You see, one day Hyrcanus shows up in Yerushalayim. See, no one knows what happened to young Eliezer. He just ran away. One day Hyrcanus shows up in Yerushalayim, the Medrash says, because he wanted to officially write his son Eliezer out of his will. Out of his will. So he shows up in front of the Beis Hanagdol of the Sanhedrin, wanting to disown his son Hyrcanus. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knows who Hyrcanus is, knows who his father, knows that the son is Eliezer, and this is what he does. He says, Eliezer, it's your time now to shine. He doesn't tell Eliezer that his father is in the audience. He says, you know, you've been learning by me for a number of years, it's time to give your first shiur. Time to give your first public discourse. To which Eliezer says, I'm not ready. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, yes, you are. And Rabbi Eliezer, Medrash says, delivers the most astounding shiur. And every single time he said something beautiful and novel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai stood up and kissed him on his head. Nashko al Rosho. Who's sitting in the audience? None other than his father, Hyrcanus. At the end of the shiur, Hyrcanus stands up and he says, Moranim v'Rabbanon, my fellow rabbis, I came here to write my son out of my will. But hinini, I hereby bequeath all of my property to Hyrcanus, my son. Excuse me, to Eliezer, my son. My friends, listen to how the Medrash ends. Eliezer says, Father, I don't need your money. I don't need your money. Because the Pasach liya kesev liya zav, the money belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't need your money. All I want is to learn Torah. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh and Rabbi Nachman both comment on this Gemara and say, what Hyrcanus really wanted to say to his father was, I don't need your money, but can you tell me you're proud of me? I don't need your money, but can you give me your approval? Because Father, you made me feel like a failure. Because Father, you made me feel like a nothing. Because Father, you told me that I could never become the man I wanted to become. So I don't need your money. I don't even need your accolades. Just tell me you're proud. Tell me you believe in me. The greatest gift that a teacher, and when I say teacher, Rebbe, Mora, teacher, could give to a student is the feeling that you believe in them. Is the feeling that at the end of the day, no matter how many challenges they may have, and we'll speak about the challenges in just a moment, but to give your students the feeling, I believe in you. And I believe in you even more than you believe in yourself. But here, of course, is the difficulty that you know that often the children who require the most belief and the most chizuk are often the most difficult ones, are often the ones who you're content when they go to the principal's office, are often the ones where if they decided not to come to school, although you won't admit it publicly, there's a part of you that breathes a sigh of relief, because I have one day of nachas ruach, one day of menucha. I can maybe focus on being a teacher instead of a disciplinarian. But if you accept the premise that all children are beautiful, all children are gold, all children are spectacular, those who are the most difficult are often the ones who you just need to believe in most. I'll tell you a story. A number of years ago, I had parents who came to meet with me. They called me. You know, it's always interesting to see when somebody says, I have an urgent problem that I need to speak to you about right now. It's always interesting to see how people define urgency. So what was the urgent problem? The urgent problem was, this is a true story. The urgent problem was, their child was about, 5, 6 years old. And you know, it's common, you ask little children, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the child said, I want to be a washing machine. I want to be a washing machine. And the kid wouldn't stop. I want to be a washing machine. Now I understood from the parents, they were both accomplished academics. Like, I'm sure the baby was probably listening to Mozart and learning astrophysics in utero. You know, whatever it is. And now, my child says he wants to be a washing machine. Let's be a washing machine. I was so, but what should we do? Is there someone we should speak to? Should we go by brachas for the gedolim? That's how desperate they were, even brachas for the gedolim, right? So what should we do about this? So of course, I had to stop myself from laughing. Because a person's problem is a real problem. Doesn't matter if you think it's not. I said, do you understand the koach of being a washing machine? I said, if I had to guess, I would say, your child probably saw you take dirty laundry, feed it into a machine, and it comes out clean. What your child is saying is, I want to be a vehicle of change. What your child is saying is, I want to have an impact. What your child is saying is, that which is soiled, I want to make clean. I said, don't worry about it. He might be the next Gadol Hador. Wants to be a washing machine, wants to affect change. What I was trying to tell the parents is just give them chizuk, because there's something even more beautiful. The best thing you could get your children to do is to dream. If your student says he wants to be this, he wants to be that, it is never a parent's place or a mechanic's place to say, no, you can't, or that's ridiculous, or aim lower, or be more realistic. You know, we all become realistic. There's not one adult who starts becoming realistic. And we all become realistic generally because we suffer some type of setback in life. And I realize I'm not going to be an astronaut. Okay, now I have to figure out what I'm actually going to do to pay my mortgage. We all become realistic in life at some point in time because we have to. But don't take away that koach of dreaming from a child 1 second earlier than is necessary. Because when you believe in a child, when you make a child feel like they could be whoever and whatever they want, that will give them the koach to dream. And the most successful people in life are the dreamers. Whether we actualize the dreams of our childhood or we just find new dreams, the most depressing Fabisna people are the ones who stop dreaming. Because they're cynical, they're jaded, they're sarcastic, they could punch a hole in everything and everyone. No one likes them, no one wants to be around them, and we avoid them like the plague. Don't let your students become like that. All it takes is one dashed dream. All it takes is one seemingly well-meaning mechanech as Rebbe to say something that makes a child stop believing in themselves. And that child could stop dreaming forever. And lastly, with this I'll conclude. Number 4. Embrace the broken bucket. There's a beautiful mashal. I actually saw it to the name of the Dubna Magid. But somebody told me they saw it from other sources as well. It's a very well-known mashal, so I'm sure you've heard it, so we'll just use it as an opportunity for chazara. The Dumna Magid says that there was once a water carrier. As one could imagine, his job was to carry water. He had a pole with two buckets. One bucket was complete, and one bucket was cracked. And every single day, the water carrier would fill up his buckets at the stream. He carried the buckets back to the master's house. And as the reality was, the full bucket would be full, but the cracked bucket, half of the contents were already gone by the time he made it back to the home. So the mashal, the Magid, says that one day they're by the bank of the river, and the broken bucket says to the water carrier, "I'm so sorry." The water carrier says, "For what?" He says, "You know, every single day you fill me up, and you schlep me, and you bring me back to the house, and they only deliver a half a bucket of water." He said, "My dear broken bucket, don't cry. I want you to take notice of the path as we walk back." The water carrier is carrying the buckets. He says to the broken bucket, "Tell me, what do you see on this side by you?" He says, "Oh, I see beautiful flowers, beautiful trees, beautiful grass." He says, "Tell me, what do you see, broken bucket, on the other side of the whole bucket?" He said, "Nothing. It's just a dirt path." To which the water carrier said, "I discovered the crack in your bucket long ago, but I figured out how to use it to our advantage." Says the Dumna Magid, "We are all broken buckets. We all have a crack somewhere. We all have some kind of deficiency. But our goal in life is to figure out not simply how to manage our weaknesses, but how to go ahead and turn those weaknesses into strengths. How can you turn the break in the bucket into an incredible koach hatzomeach, into something that is able to bring life, something that's able to bring vitality?" You know, I am not a professional educator in the classroom, but from an outsider's perspective, it seems to me that the number of children with diagnosed issues and the number of children on medications for this and for that has just grown exponentially. I don't know if that's because we're more aware of things today. Maybe it's just something different societally. But I would venture to say that the challenges that you encounter in your classrooms are so much greater than ever before. Because every single Talmud, every single student comes in with a crack in their bucket. And it is your sacred duty not to manage the crack, you see? Well, excuse me for saying this. But the goal is not to manage. The goal is not triage chinuch. The goal is, you know, sometimes the teacher thinks if the child has a problem, as long as I keep them from acting out, mission accomplished. If your student doesn't act out, but instead they spend the day in the gym, if they don't act out, but instead they're just counting ceiling tiles in the back of the classroom, then we have failed that Talmud. We have failed them. And we have failed them in an unforgivable way. Because children are acutely aware if they are successful or they're not successful. So that little Chaim Yankel who sneaks out of class and the teacher breathes a sigh of relief because it's that kid and he's spending the day in the gym. And the other teachers see, but no one really knows what to do with the kid. Everyone thinks, "Oh, the kid's happy. He's playing ball in the gym." He's not happy. He's not happy. Because in the inside, he's broken. Because he knows my teacher gave up on me. He knows maybe even my parents gave up on me. Because everyone's happy just to have me out of the way. Everyone's happy as long as I'm not causing problems. If we just manage the break in the bucket, if we just manage the crack, then we revert back to what we say. We show children that we don't really believe in them. And they lose their koach to dream. The job of every single teacher is if a student walks into your class with a break in his bucket, is to try to figure out, now how can I manage it? How can I band-aid it? But how can I help this child take the crack and turn it into a strength. That's our incredible, that's not our, it's your incredible, magnificent, sacred duty. And lastly, with this, I'll close. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yishuv bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Kala malamed is ben chaveiro Torah, ma'ala alav akasuv ki'ilu yelado. If you teach your child's friend Torah, it's as if you have birthed them. Such a strange idea. If I teach someone Torah, it's as if I've given birth to them. What does that mean? And the Marashah brings down in that Gemara, he says so beautifully. He says, a parent, loves his or her children unconditionally. A teacher, a mora, a rebbe, has to love their students unconditionally. Not everybody is lovable. Not everybody gives you the warm and fuzzy feeling like you want to be around them all the time. But here's something important to remember. Torah says, "Banim atem la'Hashem Elokeichem." We're the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Once we ask of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to love us unequivocally, to love us unconditionally, to love us even when we are not so lovable. If I want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do that for me, then I have to do that for the rest of his children as well. If I want to actualize all of the previous tenets, if I want to unlock the potential in our children, I have to love my students ki'ilu halado, as if I literally birthed them. Even when my own child does something wrong, I might get upset at them for a little while. I might not want to talk to them for a little while. I might punish them for a little while. But the love is always there. The Piagetna teaches us that our job is not to convey information. Our job is to unlock potential. Our job is to love. Our job is to turn the weaknesses into strengths. Our job is to believe in our children and to allow them to dream. I want to thank all of you. And I thank you not just simply as a Rav in the community, but I thank you as a past parent, and I thank you on behalf of the community. Because what you have done and what you continue to do is nothing short of miraculous, magnificent, overwhelming, and inspirational. You are the nobility, you know, as I started, nobility often sits in a throne. You're the nobility who lives in the trenches. But there is no greater zchus than to be in the trenches of Klal Yisrael. In the zchus of all of us coming together tonight, to be unified in our mission of true chinuch, in the zchus of the beautiful avodah, the beautiful preparation that each of you put in on a daily basis, to nurture and to nourish the souls of our beautiful children. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless each of you with incredible wisdom, incredible strength, incredible siyata d'shmaya, incredible divine providence, incredible simcha. And may we all be privileged to reap the benefits of your beautiful and holy labors for many years to come. Thank you.
Before you left.
Welcome to TA.
It was so wonderful.